Good morning. Great to see you. I hope again you might welcome and thank. Many of you will remember Matthew Gladden, who used to be So Matthew is providing our prelude, and you're not going to want to leave at the end of the service because I invited him to absolutely let loose for the postlude. So we're thrilled to welcome him back. My name is Stephen. If I haven't had a chance to meet you yet, one of the pastors of the church. You know, in our profession, the worst thing is when you're flying and someone asks, what do you do? So what do you do for a living? Because if you actually tell somebody what they do for a living, you're going to hear for the next X number of hours, however long the flight is, what they believe and don't believe about God. And generally when you're flying, it's probably the last thing in the world you actually want to hear. So only one time in my life did I lie, because I really didn't want to have the conversation. So I was asked, well, what do you do for a living? And I said, I was trying to think, okay, what would absolutely stop conversation here? So I said, neurosurgeon. To which point the person next to me said, wow, me too. So I had to confess. And I'm confessing now, too, because I'm going to just explain for a second a theory about the brain. And I'm going to explain that I know nothing about the brain. So I'm going to provide a very simplistic theory of the brain that is way more complex than I am describing. But your brain has two sides. There's a left brain and a right brain. And the left brain side is the side of your brain that thinks rationally and logically and thinks in a very linear way. The left side of your brain likes answers, likes solutions. The left side of your brain right now is already judging this experience. The left side of your brain kind of analyzes things. Do I like this? Don't I like this? The left side of your brain doesn't tolerate mystery and ambiguity very well. The right side of your brain, that part of your brain is creative. That part of your brain is intuitive. That part of your brain is actually open and embraces mystery and ambiguity. Strangely enough, there are many researchers that suggest spirituality, the way in which we experience God, is mostly a right brain experience. Yet, often, we spend a lot of our energy trying to come to God from the left brain. What we think about God, how we think about God. So this morning, I'm going to invite us to let that go, to surrender it. There's an amazing book you might be familiar with. It's called A Stroke of Insight. Dr. Jill Bolt Taylor, who is a neurosurgeon, had a stroke. And in that stroke, amazingly, the complete left side of her brain was shut off, completely shut off. She had no access to the left side of her brain. But what the scientist described was this experience of peace, this experience of oneness, this experience of love that she couldn't even put in words. So even now, through lots of therapy, she now has access to both sides of her brain. She works extraordinarily hard to make sure that she nurtures and invites the right side of her brain in life. So that's my long roundabout way of using the left side of my brain to connect to the left side of your brain to say to you, today might be a little bit different than normal. Through music, through poetry, through storytelling, through guided meditation, we're hoping you might set your left side of your brain aside for a second, that right now is sitting, get me out of here, I want to go home, and just allow yourself to experience whatever it is you'll experience. So let me begin with a poem by Mary Oliver called Mysteries. Yes. truly, truly we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. How grass nourishes the mouths of lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity, yet we ourselves dream of rising. How two hands touch, and the bonds can never be broken. How people come from delight or the scars of damage to the comfort of a poem. I keep my distance always, always from those who think they have the answers. I keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads. I have done such a successful job turning the left side of my brain off, I forgot something. So in your bulletin, there's a card, and there's an invitation for you to color while we worship together. You will find colored pencils in your pews. And research has found one of the best ways to turn the left side of your brain off is coloring. And actually, research has found that when you color, it creates the same activity in your brain as meditation. So as I'm talking this morning and telling stories, I'm hoping I hear a lot of clinking because you're passing these colored pencils down and around, and you're taking an opportunity to color. So, the Apostle Paul was writing a letter to the church at Ephesus. Now, this was a community that was incredibly well-versed in Greek philosophy. This was a community that understood Aristotle, understood Plato, that understood the value and the importance of knowledge and thinking and using the left side of your brain. And Paul wrote this letter, the letter to Ephesians, to the church at Ephesus. And he was trying to imply to them, you know, thinking, using the left side of your brain, is valuable. But there's another kind of knowledge. There's another kind of knowledge that actually may be even more important. So this is Ephesians 3, starting in verse 14. It's a prayer. Paul is praying for this community. And he says, I pray that you might be rooted and grounded in love. I pray that you might grasp how wide and long, how high and deep is the love of Christ. I pray that you might know the love that surpasses knowledge, so that you'll be filled full with the fullness of God. Did you catch that phrase? That you might know the love that surpasses knowledge. Now, when we look at the original language and we look at the Greek there, know and knowledge actually are saying, believe it or not, two different things. When he says, I pray that you might know, it's the same Greek verb used to describe the most intimate relationship you possibly can have. That relationship that is so close and intimate and profound, you don't have words for it. And knowledge is head knowledge. So Paul is saying, I pray that you might have an experience of God that you don't have words for. You know, think about you're coming to a fork in a road and a sign says, this way to a lecture about God. This way to God. Paul is saying, okay, the lecture about God has value, But my prayer is that you might encounter God in a way that leaves you speechless. Mary Oliver, truly we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. I keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. I keep company always with those who say, look, laugh in astonishment, and bow their heads. You know, in my spiritual journey, the more I know, the more I realize I don't know. And the more comfortable I have become with simply not knowing, the more I have these holy encounters that seem to surpass what I can possibly know. I'll let that sink in for a minute. The Pew Research poll did a poll where they discovered that 50% of people polled, 50% of us, imagine half of us, half of the people polled had an encounter with the divine, had an experience of the holy they couldn't explain. They couldn't put in words. They couldn't describe. And only 5% of the 50 told somebody. So here, what's that saying is that most of us actually do encounter the mystery of a love and the presence of God that surpasses knowledge, but we live in this rational, linear, logical, right, wrong, black, white, dualistic world that there doesn't seem to be room to embrace such a mystery. You know, we live in incredibly fearful, turbulent times, and it's funny when people are fearful and people are facing the uncertain, what we notice is the knee-jerk reaction of many people is to insist they know, right? In the face of fear and uncertainty, what we'll notice is the reaction of many people is to insist they have the answers. What would happen if we just allowed room and the possibility there might be a love and the presence of a love that surpasses knowledge? David Orr said, the world doesn't need successful people who claim to have all the answers. The world needs poets, storytellers, artists, healers, lovers of every kind. As I face the harsh, harsh reality of life day in and day out, my soul longs to encounter an unseen reality, the presence of a love I can't describe. So I'm going to tell three quick stories. Story number one. Take a breath. You've been breathing, but I'm going to invite you to be conscious of the breath that you've been breathing. So if you haven't been breathing, if you're their neighbor, just raise your hand. But if you take a breath, take another breath. This time, allow the breath to be just a little deeper. Have you ever stopped and contemplated the sheer miracle of the breath you just took? Have you ever stopped and contemplated that every breath we take is gift, and within that breath is the sheer miracle of life itself? And mysteriously, maybe within every breath, mysteriously we're connected to the breath of God. I remember when my eldest son, Jacob, who is now almost 24 and 6'4" and large man, but when he was a baby, and I remember when he arrived in the world, the doctor grabbed him by the ankles and shook him. I don't think they do that anymore, do they? I was thinking, what are you doing to my precious, fragile child? But apparently the doctor was trying to get him to take his first breath. So there was Jacob hanging upside down in his pink glory with all sorts of liquids exiting every orifice of his body. And he until he coughed. And he took that first breath. And I remember when he took that first breath, the doctor handed him to me, and I changed. Because in that moment, I became aware of how generous, extraordinary, inexplicable, mysterious is the gift of every breath. And within the gift of every breath we take is the gift of life. Within the gift of every breath we take, somehow mysteriously is connected to a grace we can't comprehend. So take a breath again, and again, and again. Gift, gift, gift. And if we somehow can be aware and present to the mysterious gift of every breath, it may change the way we're present in the world. So a few weeks after he took his first breath, I was changing his diaper, and I didn't realize it could be that bad. No one told me. That wasn't in a book. I didn't realize it could be that messy and disastrous and everywhere, and I was not appreciating the gift of that moment. And so I changed his diaper, and I was running a little late because I promised I would go see someone in the hospital that afternoon. And I was running late, so I bundled Jacob up, and I went to the hospital, and this woman was struggling with breast cancer. And she, too, had a one-year-old who was at home. As I came into her room, I didn't tell her about my morning. I didn't tell her about the disaster I just faced. The very first thing out of her mouth, the very first thing she said, "All I want to do is go home and change my baby's diaper." Wow. Every moment, every breath, gift, connected to a grace that surpasses all knowledge. May you know the love that surpasses knowledge. Story number two. Sue told the story about the death of her brother. She wrote, "I knew that morning that my brother Steve's time was coming to an end. We had just spent 4 hours of difficult breathing, and each breath was getting further apart. So I called the chaplain. I don't know if I called the chaplain for my brother Steve or for myself. The chaplain came. She was a great comfort. Her brother, too, was dying of cancer. She understood my pain. I asked her, I said, 'I don't understand why he's in so much pain and struggling so much. I just wish that he'd be able to let go.' And she prayed. I asked the chaplain to pray that he might be able to resolve whatever it is that he needs to resolve so that he can let go. She said she would. She prayed into my brother Steve's ear, "You are a beloved child of God. You are forgiven. You are loved with a love that will never let you go. And you can trust that love." And I prayed into my brother Steve's ear, "I love you. You can let go. You can trust God." The chaplain and I held hands and we prayed the Lord's Prayer. And when we finished praying the Lord's Prayer, I was standing near the window and I opened my eyes and I looked through the window, and there, kind of hovering in the space above the window, were five white birds. Three large, two small. They were beautiful. They looked like egrets. You know, the water birds. Which was odd because we were in the middle of the city and there was no water to be found. The chaplain and I remarked that before she arrived, the birds weren't there. But they stayed in that same space, hovering together for 2 hours until my brother Steve passed away. And then they were gone, never to be seen again. That night I was in my apartment, I was going through photographs, tears streaming down my face, and I looked up on the wall and I looked at the painting my brother Steve painted right before he became too ill to paint, and that he painted and framed and gave as a gift for me. And there in the painting were those five white birds. Three large, two small. I'd seen that painting, I looked at that painting dozens of times, and I never really noticed the birds until then. I know it's not rational, she wrote. I know it doesn't make any sense at all, and I hesitate telling anybody because people are going to think I'm nuts. But what I know is the presence of a love I can't explain that has given me this incredible sense of calm and knowledge that all is well. The poet W.B. Yeats said, "The world is full of magic things, patiently waiting for our senses to grow sharper." A preacher ran through the center of town shouting, "You must put God into your life. You must put God into your life. You must put God into your life." A priest peacefully sat in the plaza, gently rose, and said, "Sir, you are wrong. God is already in our lives. Our invitation is to awake and pay attention." Last story. Bruce struggled sleeping. He just couldn't get to sleep because he couldn't stop thinking about a friend of his that he hadn't seen in months and months and months, a friend of his who lived 2 hours away. But he had that nagging feeling that somehow his friend was in trouble. Has that ever happened to you? My guess it's happened to most of us, but we kind of dismiss it or we busy ourselves. While Bruce couldn't stop thinking, he tried to go to sleep a couple different times and it didn't work. Finally, he just sat straight up in bed at about 2 a.m. He sheepishly woke his wife, told her what was going on, and said, "You know, I'm just going to get in the car and go see him." And she said, "You're nuts. You're nuts. Go to bed." And he said, "Yeah, I probably am nuts, but I have to do this." So he got in his car at 2 a.m. and he drove the 2 hours. He arrived at his friend's porch, his driveway, at 4 a.m. And he sat in his car going, "This is insane. What am I doing? How did I get here? He's probably not even home." But he summoned up the courage, knocked on the door. No answer. Knocked again. No answer. Thought his friend must be in deep sleep, so he knocked just a little bit louder, and the porch light came on. He heard steps. the door opened. There was his friend with this bewildered look on his face, Bruce. And so Bruce entered the house and told him why he was there, and his friend continued to look bewildered. Said, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm fine. So they had a cup of coffee. They talked for about a half an hour. And then Bruce got in the car. He said if he had a tail, his tail would have been firmly between his legs, totally embarrassed how impulsive he was. The weeks to come, he just tried to put this event out of his mind. 3 months later, his friend unexpectedly showed up on his doorstep. And he said, I wasn't being honest with you. I wasn't fine. I was sitting in the dark in my dining room with a loaded revolver in my lap. And then what he said next, Bruce said, I will never forget. His friend said, there is only one power, there is only one energy in the universe that could possibly have brought you to my doorstep at that particular time. I had drifted so far, far from God. But when you stood there, I knew that there is a love at the center of all things that cares about me, that is for me. Now, the left side of our brain right now is probably going, come on, really? Coincidence? He's making it up. What if? What if there is a love that surpasses all knowledge? What if we are mysteriously connected to that love? What if that love mysteriously connects us to each other? What if that love is as close to us as our own breath? We continue to worship God as the morning offering is received.